No, it's on. Okay. Well, first of all, my gratitude to Unideer, to Wilfred, John, to Pavel for inviting me to this very timely session. And I can just share the perception from yesterday that this was really an interesting group, getting those various perspectives together. So very helpful also for me. When we talk about the demise of arms control, let me perhaps take you back on a little historical journey. So we had a historian here in the first session. Originally, I'm also a historian, even though for medieval history. I'm not going to take you back to the Middle Ages. But when we talk about the demise of arms control these days, it seems to me that there is a narrative floating around that a lot of that has to do with great power competition. Anke just talked about this paradigm that was very much pushed in the United States, that this might be a phenomenon of the Trump-Bolton era, or at least the post-2014, post-Crimea, Putin era. That's not the case. In fact, the phenomenon starts in, I would say, 1998. That's the time when the United States Senate refuses to ratify the CTBT. Only 3 years later, the United States opts out of the ABM treaty. That's in 2001. Then in 2007, Russia suspends the CFE treaty, perhaps the most important arms control treaty for the European theater. The Vienna document, a confidence-building measure from the OSCE, was last updated successfully in 2011. Since then, it's dormant. In 2016, the U.S.-Russian Plutonium Management and Disposition Agreement gets suspended. 2018 sees the withdrawal of the United States from the JCPOA, and then things are happening very fast. 2019, ATT, 2019, INF now talk about open skies and perhaps no extension of New START in 2021. So that's an accelerating process, but it's a process that is going on much longer. And it's not just a Trump phenomenon, it's not just a Putin phenomenon, it started early, and we should ask ourselves, why was it only 10 years, or let's say 9 years after the end of the Cold War, where the international community was able to devise those multilateral or bilateral agreements? What does that actually mean, the demise of arms control? Let me take you on a little journey here. Benoit already pointed out that policymakers, the public, also expert circles are losing knowledge. And I think with regards to arms control, that's the key point. What does it mean? Arms control leads us to lose knowledge. And that leads to assessments based on incomplete knowledge, which then leads to perceptions taking over, which can lead to misperceptions, which might lead to insecurity on one side, both sides, many sides, which then leads to behavior, what we as international scholars call balancing or hedging, which means you invest in your defensive capabilities or you form alliances, which can lead to arms racing, which might lead to crisis instability, which in the end could lead, hopefully not, to nuclear use. So, arms control provides us all with knowledge. We are losing this knowledge base since at least 20 years. Arms control can provide off-ramps to this vicious circle, cycle, but unfortunately, that's not en vogue at the moment, and so we all should be very much concerned about it. So that's the more broader point about the demise.